Hello and welcome to the Investors Chronicle Companies and Market Show. I am John Heumann, editor of the Investors Chronicle, back from my 2 weeks away, which was very nice indeed. I've brought the weather back with me from Vienna. I'm joined today by Harriet Clarfield. How are you, Harriet?
I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent. And Alex Newman.
Hi, John.
How are you?
Good, thanks. You're looking very smart.
Yeah, got an event tonight.
What are you doing?
It's a reader event. We do them every now and then. This one is about income.
Excellent.
And Algie Hall and Leonora Walls is going to be presenting this.
Yeah, Algie also looking weirdly smart today.
Yeah, I've just insulted him about that. Said he looked like a middle manager in a bucket and spade factory. His sleeves rolled up and a tie on. he took it as a compliment. Anyway, so this week has been the first instalment of our annual AIM 100 feature, where we look at the top 100 companies on the AIM market, as the title would suggest. Alex, you've had the joy of putting that together this year.
Sheer joy.
It is a joy, isn't it?
It is, yeah. This is it's a logistical challenge, but we've got there in the end. And we've just finally got the 50-1, which will be out next week, all lined up as well. So
they're all written now?
They're all written.
Excellent. Yeah. Well done. I was going to say, we'll keep this brief, because I know you've all got to get back there and get part two going. I guess you've got to read through it now before I read through it. But let's keep it brief.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk through some of the key stories that have emerged from the AIM 100. As I say, we look at everything, all the companies throughout the higher end of the junior market, and give a little write-up on each and have a view of their prospects, 50 at a time over 2 weeks.
So it's just set by market capitalisation. It's not our ranking of the best 100 companies on AIM, I suppose.
Yeah, well, it's the AIM 100, isn't it?
It's the AIM 100. Yeah.
And that moves, the market caps move, but it's one of those quarterly things that gets updated by the stock market. So some of the companies on there might actually be smaller than some other companies that aren't in the list. So that is probably worth highlighting.
Indeed,
Thank you, Alex. Before we do that, Harriet, seeing as you're with us, one of the big news stories of the week has been Sage. Now, this is supposed to be a boringly reliable company, but the wheel seems to have come off.
Exactly. So, I mean, I suppose boringly reliable, partly because it's an accounting software group.
Ooh.
Doesn't sound like the most exciting of areas to specialise in. But Sage is obviously this massive international company. And I had a trading update last Friday, and the shares fell by nearly a tenth on the news that they'd downgraded their sales guidance by one percentage point for the full year.
What's been the problem? Why have they downgraded their guidance?
So they used this slightly unusual phrase, inconsistent operational execution for the 6 months to March, which in a nutshell means inconsistency because there was relative underperformance in two of the company's geographies, while the rest of their geographies traded quite well. So it's a little bit vague in terms of giving us much information.
Yeah, when they say inconsistent execution?
Exactly.
That suggests that that's a problem they have with their go-to-market strategy.
Yes.
Rather than it being sort of wider market weakness.
Yes, exactly. So the two problem areas were Northern Europe and the Middle East and Africa. And from what we understand, Northern Europe, which is largely the UK and Ireland for Sage, basically didn't sell as much of the higher recurring revenue products, as many, I should say, of the higher recurring revenue products as they'd hoped to. And those kind of products are like cloud products, for example.
They're not blaming the economy then here?
No, I don't think they reference the economy in their trading update. But, I think there is, second of all, the other issue that they alluded to was contract slippage for their enterprise product in the Middle East and Africa. And they did say that they expect much of that slippage to be recovered in the second half. But in terms of sort of wider issues, I think we could see this in the context of sort of general jitters in the market around UK-listed software companies.
Yeah, so we had problems just before I went from Micro Focus, had a big profit warning, a huge, huge profit warning really there.
Well, yeah, it was really, for Micro Focus, it was in March, and it was, for some background, Micro Focus acquired or merged with HP's software business.
Enterprise software business.
Exactly.
And as far as I understand it, a lot of that enterprise software business is what you might once have known as autonomy.
Yes, exactly. So, and that sort of merger had been a long time coming as well. And I think they had, to begin with, that merger had been the most exciting thing ever. And it was, from management's perspective, and maybe the excitement about it had been slightly dialed down in terms of volume as it actually neared completion. And now we've seen that there have been some transitional issues, which I think Micro Focus largely blamed for a downgrade in their sales guidance for the full year. In terms of some of the issues Micro Focus faced, I think we've talked about this before, but the implementation of that IT system was one of them. I think basically a few areas for Micro Focus, which maybe had anticipated being a little easier in terms of the integration, haven't quite worked out with HPE.
Okay, and there was another software company that's had a little bit of a wobble, which is Sophos, which is kind of antivirus, you know, web
protection
type stuff.
Cybersecurity,
yeah.
And actually, Sophos then, a few weeks ago now, actually had a very good update. So billings growth is back up to where they wanted it to be. But yeah, Sophos is another example of a company that has had ups and downs in terms of share price momentum. And I think there is this kind of wider feeling that anything can knock these companies off their pedestals at the moment.
Is that because they're highly valued? Or, are they more highly valued than the sort of broader market?
Micro Focus was highly valued. Obviously, nearly half of its market cap was eroded after this update on the transitional issues it was facing. Sage, actually, at the moment, is not particularly highly valued. But I think there's so much uncertainty now about how much they're going to be able to achieve in terms of their long-term targets. They did maintain their long-term targets within their recent trading update in terms of sales growth and operating margins. But I think people are now questioning whether they're really going to be able to keep those up.
Yeah, I mean, we've stuck at hold, I noticed.
We've stuck at hold, yeah. So actually, Sage was a buy tip until last year. And I'm now quite glad that it's it's not a buy tip anymore. But I think we didn't want to call the bottom.
It's a good, I mean, Sage is a good business. It's a cracking business.
It is fundamentally a good business, yeah. It's
been around a very long time. Its products are used by, you know, accountants and businesses across the country. Mm. A lot of those deals are kind of small, so it's lots of small deals, no big exposure to single clients. Yeah. I mean, it's exactly the kind of thing we're looking for,
really. And
it's got
a broad international software portfolio, which is really popular. I mean, people, organisations from sort of massive companies to freelancers use Sage for everything in terms of their accounting, but also they have this enterprise product, which is actually where the contract slippage issue was, which really stretches across order management to HR to customer relationship management. So you can see where there could be more cross-selling opportunities for them in the future, but it's just whether they get over this real dip that they experienced last week.
Indeed, and they don't have the market to themselves. I can't remember the name of the company. It's always advertising on TV. Small business software in the cloud. Quicken, or is it Intuit? I can't remember which one it is.
Oh, I'm not sure. They don't have it to themselves, exactly. So, and I know there's another company that was brought to my attention probably last week called Tax Systems.
Never heard of it.
I know, neither had I. Which is also a sort of accounting software company. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, interesting. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to the AIM 100. Let's start at the bottom, shall we? Because the bottom is occupied by oil and gas.
Yeah.
You seem to have written most of the sort of top first 10.
It's quite peculiar. So the bottom being sort of the 100 to 90 in the countdown.
Quite big companies though.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. So we're talking sort of probably starting about 180 million pound market cap. There's a number of resources stocks, oil and gas and mining, in fact, which have just crept on to the list this year. No surprises why. One of the reasons being that commodity prices have done fairly well. That's not to say that all of them have had a great year. I mean, Amerisa Resources in, I think, 97th place has actually fallen quite a bit in the last year.
Yeah, I remember them being one of the bigger companies when we put this list together before.
Yeah.
They had some results this week as well, didn't they?
They did, yeah. I think, so we said there it's kind of crunch time for Amerisa.
But we kept on a buy, didn't we?
We did,
That's brave.
Yeah, we've kept the faith here, though. It's been a very, very challenging year for Amerisa. They're this frontier acreage in the Putumayo region in Colombia and are exporting via a pipeline through across the border to Ecuador. So fantastic oil fields, very, very cheap transportation now. But, you know, as ever, it's very, very hard to do business in frontier oil and gas plays. And in the last year, they've had social unrest, which has, among other issues, been one of the reasons why they failed really to hit their production targets for 2017.
Okay. What else? We had some other results this week from some of the companies that you've covered in. So we had results from Eland and Griffin, I think, as well.
Yeah, that's right. So Eland Oil and Gas, another politically risky oil and gas jurisdiction in Nigeria there. They had very, very good results this week. They've been ramping up spectacularly since last May when the Forcados terminal, which is run by Shell, was reopened following some pipeline attacks in 2016. That was very, very crucial for Eland because, I mean, it allows them to sell their product to market. That's ramping back up. They've got lots of fields coming and wells coming on stream, and they're very, very lowly valued. I mean, it's fairly typical of Nigeria-focused oil and gas stocks for multiple reasons. Not only, you know, because as we saw last year, their major export terminal came offline. But yeah, they're back on the AIM 100 this year, and I think very, very cheaply valued.
Yeah, I mean, that's an extraordinary ramp up in turnover, 2,800% increase last year, and the forecast suggests that's going to ramp up pretty quickly still in 18 and 19 as well. So it looks like it's happening.
Yeah. So that's from pretty much a standing start. Consensus forecasts this year, pre-tax profit of $118 million. The company is currently valued for £185 million. So that you can see the sort of multiple they're currently on. Of course, you know, it's a politically risky jurisdiction to be in, you know, an explorer producer. So the shares are always going to carry a discount. Also, owing to the tax incentives, they're going to probably have to carry on developing their fields and drilling rather than turning to the dividend list, which might be one way of convincing investors that this is, you know, this is they're going to see some fruits of the cash generation now. That might be a few years down the line, though, I think.
Okay, but potentially more capital upside in the interim.
Yes, and you know, we should also mention that oil prices just hit $74 a barrel yesterday, which is a lot higher than everyone was expecting, pretty much. And Eland currently sells its product from the Forcados terminal at a premium to Brent. So yeah, multiply that by the production growth, and there's a lot of cash flow this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think though in the Alpha report you wrote for us last month, I mean, you did imply that, or you state quite clearly that the, you know, oil prices were likely to stay high for a while.
I mean, there's a caveat to that. I think, you know, lots of people have been saying that they're going to be range bound because the concern is that any geopolitical tension which is likely to raise oil prices will just be checked by a flood of production from the US. As it turns out, OPEC discipline has really held firm, and their cooperation with Russia has really checked the another flood of oil from traditional suppliers. I mean, US shale hasn't quite caught up to the levels people were thinking, but I mean, summer is yet to come. I don't think $74, save for some big geopolitical spat with Iran, is likely to be there forever.
Having said that, the geopolitical situation is somewhat fragile at the moment.
Indeed, yeah. Not to mention Venezuela, which, I mean, many people are thinking could collapse by the end of the year, and their production is falling month on month. So,
So more tightening from that direction.
Yeah.
Let's talk about one more from your area. Let's talk about Griffin, because it's not a company I'd really heard of. It's had a storming year, up 167% to make its way into the AIM 100. Tell us about that company.
Yeah, I didn't know much about Griffin before this year either. So they have this gold, silver, lead, zinc mine in China. Four good commodities to be producing at the moment. An excellent mine by all accounts. China-based though, and they have grown production considerably just in time for serious rises in those commodity prices. What seemed to have sparked the very, very sharp re-rating in Griffin shares was a note last year from Cantor Fitzgerald, which suggested that investors should value on a similar basis to Central Asian Metals, which is, I mean, I think it's one of the best stocks on AIM. That's in the top 50, which is out next week, and we write about them. Central Asian Metals being a copper producer as well, with very, very strong track record of dividends. Griffin Mining doesn't have that, and also what Griffin Mine doesn't have is a permit for their second zone of mining, which the chairman has said in the past that it's coming. Now he's saying there's no real clarity on when we're likely to get this permit. Added to that, it's an AIM stock with its operations solely concentrated in China. You know, there's a mixed track record there. I mean, we have no reason to doubt anything that the company is saying, but they're likely beholden to Chinese mining license authorities. They're not paying a dividend, unlike Central Asian Metals. Not quite sure they should be rated at the same heady multiple that they are now. So we've said sell, which is our first recommendation of the shares. But if you've held the shares for any point in the last 3 years, you would have done very, very well. So,
Indeed. Okay, let's move on to tech, because you know, AIM is well known for mining and oil and gas, but it's also been very well known for being a very good environment in which small tech companies can grow. And there's quite a lot, as you would imagine.
Yeah.
But you've been busy too, Harriet.
Yeah, I have. And I was going to talk a little bit about Sumerio Enterprises, actually, to begin with, which is a tech company in a way, but it does high-tech concrete levelling, which might not sound
that's not
like
technology.
Well, technology and concrete leveling combined, and it might not sound like it's going to set the world on fire when you spell it out like that, but I think Somero is really proving how lucrative that industry can be. In a nutshell, it provides equipment, training and customer support for concrete levelling services around the world. You're laughing at me.
I'm not laughing.
It doesn't sound that exciting.
Listen, I'm going to have a bit of concrete levelling done myself in the near future. But,
I mean, as an example, apparently China uses around half of the world's concrete. So that is a place where Somero sees a real growth opportunity. I mean, more generally, it set itself a sales target of $90 million for 2018. And it's almost there. In 2017, I think it got to sort of $86 million. And China is an area, although it's a market in which it hasn't made amazing headway yet. And actually, it suffered, I think, slightly lower revenues there last year. That could be just one sort of springboard for growth.
So it has established sales operations in the UK.
In the UK, in the US, in China, in other areas as well. But I'm using China as an example, but I think that North America is another place where it sees growth potentially progressing over the next few years.
Presumably helps along if the Trump infrastructure plan comes to fruition.
Potentially. I mean, I should say that I think they did suffer some issues in North America because of rain. Obviously, you can't level concrete when there's terrible weather. But that was a couple of years ago and things have improved there since then. And Somero isn't, although I've kind of mentioned the revenue growth, it is also more and more an income stock as well. So in their last full year results, which were earlier this year, it set itself a target net cash balance of $15 million and said that it would distribute 50% of surplus cash as a special dividend.
Let's have a look. We've got a table in here at the back with a number of fundamentals in it. Somero, 89, dividend yield 2.7%, which is not bad for a high growth AIM company.
Exactly. So it does look like it's performing well on all fronts at the moment. Obviously, as I said, there has been a weather issue in the past. They see China as a good opportunity for growth, but and hopefully that will come to fruition.
Let's go full tech.
Full tech, okay. Yeah. Well, Taptica was another company I was going to talk about.
There it is, big picture of Mark Zuckerberg accompanying it. What's it got to do with Mark Zuckerberg?
This is nothing. This is the issue we've been trying to sort of figure out. So I should say Taptica was a buy tip, and we've actually downgraded it to a hold in the last couple of weeks. And basically, since these allegations emerged about the UK data analytics firm Cambridge Analytica and Facebook, and I mean, just to recap, I'm sure everyone has read about this a lot, but allegedly Cambridge Analytica used people's private Facebook information from 2014. It's in the news constantly. It's an ongoing sort of saga, and it's been developing a lot since mid-March.
And while I was away, Mark Zuckerberg gave a two-day testimony to the US Congress.
Exactly.
Actually, which seems to do, as a little tangent, that seems to do the tech sector a power of good, because the shares have jumped quite sharply in the last few weeks.
And Facebook itself, whose shares had been falling massively, I think did rise again a little bit after those two congressional hearings.
Back to Taptica, though. What's it got to do with Taptica?
So Taptica is a mobile advertising group. And as I said, potentially it has nothing to do with Taptica, but it can hardly be a coincidence, we think, that as the story around Facebook has developed, Taptica's share price has just fallen so much. I think it's down nearly 30% since the allegations first broke, and it just seems too much of a coincidence for that, because Taptica hasn't put out anything else in that period, apart from its own full-year results, within which it included a line saying the recent coverage around Facebook does not affect our business model.
Mm. So, in terms of the results, what sort of numbers are we talking about in terms of the growth rates?
So the results were actually really good. I think their sales were around $211 million, which brings their four-year compound annual revenue growth rate to 49%, which is pretty good. They're profitable, and they expanded into the Asia-Pacific region a bit more through their acquisition of a majority stake in a company called Ad Innovation.
Well, this is Japan, isn't it?
This is Japan.
Yeah.
And they also bought a company called Tremor Video in the US, which has helped them to expand in North America, and also it's brought them a new sort of dynamic in brand advertising. But I think the issue, although they said a few days after the Facebook allegations broke, they said that it wouldn't affect their business model. And Berenberg, the broker, actually also kind of reiterated that and said the group thinks that because they don't rely on Facebook for data analytics. They do that internally. Facebook is obviously one of the advertisers they count as a company they work with among sort of 600 others.
You would imagine it's a fairly major customer, because I mean, Facebook does account for a very large chunk of advertising revenue.
Well, they also work with Amazon. They do work with other big tech giants. I don't think we're aware of what proportion of their overall advertising partners it makes up.
Yeah, yeah.
And they also say, you know, they do leverage big data to help target, to help with media targeting. So you can see how that might ring alarm bells among investors. But I think probably the bigger concern for investors is that new regulation might be brought in. And so even if this Facebook Cambridge Analytica scenario doesn't directly affect them, they may face constrictions and new legislation which could ultimately constrain their growth. And this is all completely hypothetical, because so far we don't know if it will affect them at all, but we just weren't prepared to take the risk.
But everything about the possible regulation of the tech sector is hypothetical at the moment.
And exactly.
But it's enough to have shifted sentiment quite considerably.
And events like the Facebook one, which has just led to international concern, you know, governments around the world have called on Facebook for questioning. I think if we see more of these, it's likely that we will see much more regulation beyond GDPR coming into effect in May.
Well, your big feature was very prescient, wasn't it? Your feature.
Oh.
Playing by the new rules. Yeah. When did you write that? February, was it?
I think it was March.
Was it March?
It was last month, yeah.
Oh, good timing there.
Yeah.
One more, Harriet, one more.
One more. Well, actually, I was going to talk about one that's going to be in next week's
that's fine.
Issue.
Let's,
as a sort of teaser for next week's AIM100.
Go on, that's good. I like it. We always like a nice teaser.
So Accesso Technology, which I think we can say is definitely a tech stock. It's got
it
technology
is.
In the name.
It is.
So Accesso provides ticketing and queuing software. And it was traditionally for theme parks and water parks, but it's now expanded into live event ticketing and ski resort software. So all sorts.
I think I've used this stuff.
Have you?
Well, yeah, I used to go with my kids to Legoland quite a bit, and we being disinclined to queue up for ages, we'd get this thing called a queue bot, which you could jump the queue basically.
And, well, that's the idea, and I think they are helping to transform the theme park industry. You know, people don't want to queue anymore, and they want to sort of know where they're going to get in a certain event in terms of seating as
well. It makes made the whole thing so much more of a nicer experience than standing with very young children in a queue all day. You know, it's worth the money. I mean, it's like a tenner each for these things for a day.
And it just saves so much. It makes a much more pleasant experience. And Accesso saw really strong growth in 2017. So their ticket volumes passed 100 million for the first time ever. And I think their compound annual revenue growth rate over 7 years is now 24%, which is also pretty good.
Over seven years. Pretty spectacular.
Yeah, it's pretty great. I suppose in terms of what could be a future growth driver, the company was very excited within their most recent results about their Prism product, which is an in-park wearable device for water parks. And I think probably theme parks too. So Accesso says long queues are the single greatest dissatisfaction metric for theme park goers.
Yeah, I would agree.
And they've helped to create the world's first 100% queueless water park.
I wouldn't know about that.
I know. I can't say that I have been to a water park recently, but it does sound like a great idea. And I think they say if this takes off beyond this one water park, it could really transform the entire industry.
What is that? Water parks are massive. I mean, not here in this country,
in America,
because our weather's rubbish.
Huge.
But in America, huge.
So I think that's a real opportunity for them. I suppose what investors might dislike is the fact that because the company has enjoyed such strong momentum, it is very highly valued. I think its forward PE is somewhere in the 40s currently.
Mm, yeah, it's punchy.
It is punchy. Obviously, a lot of tech stocks do have very punchy ratings. But I think, you know, they've had this really strong growth trajectory to date. And regrettably, I should say, we've always found when it's come to writing results, it just hasn't appeared to be a particularly attractive entry point.
Mm.
But, you know, some investors may be willing to take the jump. But I wish there was a roller coaster metaphor there.
Jump maybe is not a good metaphor for a roller coaster. I mean, sometimes you have these companies that they always look expensive, but if they have the growth to back it up, sometimes
And Accesso is increasingly, I think, convincing investors of that. So, yeah. It's one to watch, I should say.
Look forward to that one. Yeah. Okay, thank you, Alex. Thank you, Harriet. I say there's a lot of companies covered this week and next week as well. We've got a bit of an interesting metaphor on the cover this week for AIM. It's a caterpillar in week one, which is going to flourish, if you look at the advert at the back of the magazine, into a butterfly next week. And we thought this was kind of interesting and appropriate for AIM in a couple of ways, although it did occur to me as I was putting this together that some butterflies don't live very long. But I guess the same is true of AIM shares.
Though, as Graham has just pointed out, the Vanessa Cardwy butterfly does live for 12 months, so that should at least guarantee, at least a year on AIM is the top of AIM.
For a butterfly, that's Methuselah, isn't it? Really? I suppose, so we're looking for the Vanessa Cardwy of the AIM world.
I think the metaphor's been tortured.
We're torturing it. It's horrible. okay, anyway, yeah, so that feature takes up quite a large chunk of the magazine. There are some other bits and bobs that you would expect. Tips section, as usual, lots in the comment section, and the money section, which they will be looking at in their podcast, which I think they record tomorrow. Lots of interesting news going on beyond Sage. It's actually been quite a good week on the markets. We picked the bad news, but lots of interesting merger news and stake building news. So yeah, pick up the magazine, the AIM 100, part 1, 100 to 51, in all good news agents. You can't miss it. It's a large leaf with a being nibbled by a caterpillar. And yeah, we will be back again next week talking about part 2. So thank you very much.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real, frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.